I have a note here about how this was the saddest flaming bed scene ever.
I literally went back and was like, was there a fire?
It looked to me like they like kept a pie in the oven for too long and then threw the flaming pie on his bed. It was just like a perfect little circle on fire, and then it was instantly out.
Because they couldn't afford a canopy bed. So usually they set the canopy part on fire, but he didn't have a canopy bed. So then you have to literally set the mattress on fire.
Oh, that was so funny.
Oh God, it was so good.
So Lillian, I just finished watching our episode or our movie for this week, this adaptation. And yes. Wow, that was hardly a film.
I know. I think I'll save my immediate thoughts, but I do think it's perfect for our purposes.
Yes. Yes. It's ripe for roasting. I think I want to say in advance, if this is somebody's favorite adaptation of Jane Eyre, I apologize because I did not like this one and I am ready to tear it apart.
Yeah. With that, we watched the 57 version.
Yes. This is 1957, which I don't know if it was a movie or a made for TV film. Cause the version that we watched on YouTube, it had like, it had been recorded off of a television airing. Like at one point, like it would kind of go bloop and you, for a second, you could see an ad and I saw a lion and I was like, what's that lion trying to sell? But it jumped right back to the movie. So I was like, oh, okay.
But yeah, it was made for TV. I obviously want to hear all your roasts, all your criticisms out here, but some of our listeners may have decided that listening to this episode about the 1957 Jane Eyre TV adaption is their foray into the story. Whoa. They want to hear what the story of Jane Eyre is about. So can you, as fast as possible, and I'm going to time you.
Oh boy, oh boy.
We got to get back into the rhythm of Jane Eyre, because it's been 2 weeks since we've done a Jane Eyre one between our break and our palate cleansers. So yeah.
Oh boy, okay.
Are you ready to recap? I've got my timer ready to go.
I'm ready. You say go and I'll go.
Okay, go.
Okay. Jane Eyre knocks on a door at Thornfield. It opens and she's like, hey, it's me. Give me a job. And instantly there's a creepy laugh and she's like, okay. And they're like, don't worry about that. Then she's like, I'm going to go post a letter. And she meets a grumpy man who has an invisible horse and she walks him all the way back to the house and he has a ward and he's like, this is my girl. And instantly he's like, yo, I'm really drunk and I like you, Jane. What if I try to smooch? And she's like, no. And then he's like, well, I'm going to have a party instead. And he tries to make her jealous. Falls in love with Jane. A guy shows up. He cock blocks everything, gets attacked in the night. And then as they're like confessing love and such, he's like, well, can't get married. He's already married. She's upstairs. There's a lady chained to a bed. Jane's like, I'm getting a carriage out of here. So she leaves and then instantly returns to find the house burned, the wife dead, and the man blind. And she's like, this works, I guess. The end. There we go.
So that was 53 seconds, which... Nice. I don't know the exact time of the movie, but I do think that the 53 seconds was longer than this movie was.
It was so short. Dude, one of my notes I wrote over and over again is like, they're just plowing through this plot. Like they didn't even bother with the childhood. They just start right with her arriving at the house. Thoughts on that?
That's the first thing that I said is like, that's what I meant by perfect for our purposes is like, they trimmed all the fat off Jane Eyre. They were like, let's just get to those points. Let's hit the plot points. Listen, her childhood was sad. We don't need to dwell on it. Very much how I felt about it.
Yes.
I think additionally, the other big trimming of the fat that they did was she didn't really leave, did she? She didn't make it out of the carriage.
Yes. Like, it's like the carriage went down the street, took a U-turn, came back. And in that time, Bertha managed to burn the house, kill herself, and all the above.
And so she literally says, go back. Mm-hmm. So she hears something, which frankly, based on how long she's been gone, could just be her actually hearing Mr. Rogers.
Right. Yelling. Maybe not magic voice on the wind.
So good. And then they don't do a wedding.
Nope.
They just have him confess love, kiss her. And then immediately the brother comes in with the most 50s villain facial expressions you've ever seen and goes, my sister's locked in the attic and he's married to her. And that's like, oh, yep, that is actually the whole premise. Dude. Jumped right there, huh?
Dude, I think maybe he's my favorite character in this. Because I wrote down that he is like the incarnation of a cock block. Because at first, when Rochester first tries to like seduce Jane out on the balcony, he shows up. And he's all like, I'm wounded. Ouch, you can't kiss. You have to tend to my wounds. And then, yes, when he's proposing, the way he just slides into the room like, oh, excuse me, am I interrupting? This guy's married to my sister who attacked me last night. So you can't marry him.
So one thing that I do want to say about this as like my initial thoughts on this. First of all, I think a lot of the stuff that they trimmed has to do with the fact that they made this movie with 25 cents that they found in a couch.
Yep.
And someone's grandma's clothes.
I knew it was like a TV movie because it gave me vibes of there's an old, so I have this on VHS. There's some old like TV movie recording of Peter Pan. And the sets were very similar, where it looks kind of like they filmed it at a local community theater. But like with this one, Rochester's house is like half just black box theater. It felt like they didn't bother to put in the wall panels. It's just darkness behind like the hovering mantelpiece. And like I think one of my favorite things is when Jane is going to go for her walk to post the letter. It like looks like the bushes are literally against her back and she's like looking through a tree. They can't afford a horse. There's just the sound of a whinny. And
so, horses are very expensive. They also can't afford a dog.
Nope, no dog. We hear him barking. We hear the horse clip clops. I just thought, oh my God, all of the budget cuts made this really entertaining and funny.
Yes. And I also will say it did feel the most like a play. We talked about that a little bit with the 83. This was very, very much a play. Like yes. There was very little quiet moments. There were a lot of monologues. They had one of the things that I love about this era of Hollywood, which is just like a lot of talking to someone else in the room, but cheating to the camera, like you teach the audience at a play. And then like the long looks while the music plays. And I'm not saying I do this in life, but I live alone and there's just a lot of time to fill in the day. Mm-hmm. So I do dramatically look off into the distance a lot. And this made me want to do it more.
Oh my gosh.
A lot is a strong word. And I'm not crazy and no one needs to check on me.
We don't need to literally chain you to the bed like this Bertha was. The chains.
But such long chains. That way she can attack everyone who comes in that room.
I loved that, like, right away, the laughter, like, we hear it in, I think, the first 30 seconds of the movie.
Before we meet Jane, we hear Bertha laugh.
I love that it literally sounded like the kind of old witch's cackle that would come out of, like, a Halloween, like, toy that, I don't know, some kind of decoration that would, like, do that. I thought that was so funny, but
I did sincerely, like, I'm not, like, when I say I liked the dramatic looks off into the distance, I like this era of movie.
Yeah.
And I also, part of what I like about it is when it's sort of, like, cheap and not cheap. Some of them aren't cheap. Some of them are expensive. But when it has that sort of, like, it's about the actors, it's about, they seem like they're doing impressions of actors from Hollywood in this time. It's one of the reasons why, like, when people do movies about this time in Hollywood, it's so easy to pinpoint. Because I was trying to tell, and maybe you know, or one of our lovely listeners can email us, are they doing British accents or are they doing mid-Atlantic accents?
I think they're doing mid-Atlantic accents. Yeah. That kind of made up accent that Hollywood of that time was like, oh, we need you to sound kind of fancy, but it's not British. So they literally like invented it for the films. Yeah.
Yeah. Mid-Atlantic accents are not, no one speaks like that in life. No one ever spoke like that in life. That wasn't something that people talked like that at the time and they don't anymore. They were trained. They would go to schools to learn how to talk like that. And there's something so romantic about that. There's so many problems with that time in Hollywood. Don't spend too much time researching it. It will just bum you out. But just watching it and seeing like perfect ringlets and
perfect accents.
Yes.
Quote unquote perfect accents.
These like these fake non-existent accents. I will say this Rochester's Jane is the best. So good.
Dude, okay. When you were talking about it feeling like a play, his stage makeup was a lot. Like
so much.
There's so many scenes where, like, for a second he'd look kind of normal, and I'm like, oh, I can see how he's handsome in a way. Like his nose, he's got a good nose. But then, like, he would just tilt his head down a bit, and his eyes became sockets, and like they had like put intense eyeliner and eyeshadow under his under eyelids, and I'm like, he has a spooky ghost.
He has the most intense eyebrows. His face is the faces he makes are character choice in this.
Yes,
he has the most intense eyebrows. You're absolutely right. He has that eye makeup stuff, but I also think it's the lighting. Like the lighting was really intense.
Yeah.
Which I don't know enough about old timey filmmaking, so you'll have to tell me. Tweet at us at Airbuds about our lack of old-timey film knowledge, which we'll do better in the future or not. I don't know. But I think they had to do that for the cameras. They had to get really intense with the lighting because the cameras weren't as good.
Yeah. And I feel like that's something more so for a made-for-TV film, which, first of all, I was surprised they had a made-for-TV movie in the 50s. That felt a little early to me. But, I mean, so when I was going through YouTube looking for this version, the one from the 40s came up, 44, I think. And the thumbnail side by side, that one, like 10 years earlier at least, looks 10 times better. So if you have the right budget and you're filming on an actual studio and not a community theater stage with like a lamp that you stole that you're hanging over their faces, then like the lighting can look good and the makeup can be chill.
And the joke that I was making about the fact that they were wearing someone's grandma's clothes, like 57, you could have had someone's grandma wear dresses from the 1800s.
Yeah.
And Jane has like two dresses in this whole movie. Mm-hmm. I did. So I was taking screenshots throughout because I was worried that we weren't going to be able to find hot enough content for our amazing Instagram. and I was one of the biggest things that like really stuck out to me that I think emphasizes, just to wrap up Rochester's face and his face being a face, is they stand really close together a lot.
Yes.
Which I can't tell if that's a function of the aspect ratio on this, or if it's a function of that's how they told the like steamy, steamy romance, was they were just constantly a little bit too close to each other, which I did really enjoy.
Oh my gosh. But
that's part of the reason why I think he was always looking down. So between the lighting and his big, big eyebrows, that really made it so you could never see his eyes, because he was constantly like just like a little too close to her. So he was always like looking down at her, and it was causing these intense shadows.
And then his eyes peek through from underneath the mighty brow, and you're like, eek. It's very spooky, someone looking out from under there. The standing close, I felt that too, where I think it's partially budget and they're like, yeah, the aspect ratio, because it always felt as if they were like crammed onto like a 1-inch set. But then also, boy, he was so up in her business. And I know part of it was that he got drunk that one night, which weird choice. I don't think that whole scene, I was like gritting my teeth and I was like, this is like the rapiest Rochester we've ever seen. Like, oh dude, he was like going in for like the drunk, like I'm gonna kiss you like so often. And she was just
that scene, we've seen similar like dancing on that line with some of the other ones, but it's always super clear that like the way that they tell that story in other versions, he's very clearly, I'm trying to think of the right word. He's clearly showing the difference between her innocence and his worldly experience.
Yes.
Where in this, his worldly experience came off as, I might make you be less innocent, which was not sexy. Didn't enjoy that at all.
No, that scene gave me a lot of ishes and ewes, but I mean, I do like the kind of like closeness, but not in this context. Like I didn't like that he was intoxicated. Like if he was being sober and like also kind of standing close and being like, what up, Jane? Like I'm up here in your business. Like maybe that could have been good, but him being drunk and like sticking a cane right next to her face. And I'm like, oh, that's like a weapon, dude. Like chill out.
Here's the other note that I have from that is I felt like maybe the actor was going a little method for that scene because he did really seem to be drinking that alcohol, which I can see someone in the 50s being like, I can only pretend to be drunk on cognac if I'm drunk on cognac. And that's where all the movie's budget went, was to get this guy his schmalcohol.
Oh my gosh. Who can say? I doubt this has a very extensive IMDb. I literally just finished watching it, so I didn't really get a chance to dive into the trivia, but it'd be very funny if it was like, most of the budget went to supplying this man's alcoholism.
We've gone too dark. Airbus is supposed to be light and fun. Okay. Shouldn't be talking about assault and alcoholism. Okay.
Let's maybe change it to something cute and sweet. And I want to say that I really liked Adele in this.
That was another thing. I think Adele is a tough character to play. She has to be a little bit annoying. It's pretty important part of who Adele is.
Yes.
But this Adele was a little cutie patootie. A great little actress with the best accent of anyone in this movie. Oh, this is the most authentic. What a British accent for a tiny little girl.
I loved
French.
When...
Did I say British? French.
You said, yeah. Mm-hmm. You want to see that line again?
No, leave it in. People have to know that we're real.
Keep it in. Oh my gosh. I liked that when she's looking out the window and she sees him, she does a cute little hop of excitement. That was adorable. I liked that he was nice to her. Rochesters always get bonus points if they're actually nice to Adele. And he spoke French with her and was cute and gave her a music box. So that was good. That's
Grace
about all my
Poole.
Thoughts.
Grace Poole. We got to talk about Grace Poole.
The spooky lady.
Another one with a lot of, I don't know what to call it other than face acting, which is that her eyebrows did a lot. And I do attribute it to, at the time, a lot of actors were coming from theater into movies.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of big, like, play to the back of the theater acting in this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think particularly Grace Poole doesn't say a lot, but doesn't she though?
Oh my gosh. I think her cheekbones spoke for her. Like, those things could cut glass. That was crazy.
And the eyebrows, someone did her so dirty with those eyebrows.
Yeah.
That poor woman could be pretty, but her eyebrows ruin it.
Did she even speak once in the whole movie? I mean, maybe there was like a line or two when she came to speak with Mrs. Fairfax, but I feel like mostly she just kind of stood there and stared at Jane to be creepy.
It was a lot of that. And also I was noting this at the beginning. I may have dropped off at some point. So if I'm wrong, again, just tweet at us about it. I don't think she was ever on camera when we heard the laughing. Like in that first scene in particular, it was always cutting away. Mm-hmm. So there is an element of they didn't expect people to necessarily know this story, in which case, what a buck wild way to get introduced to the story.
Oh my God, I know. Just like, oh geez, spooky house. Yeah.
Because it's one thing, if you have an hour to tell this story, I understand skipping to the part that they did. Mm-hmm. But they said that, like, when Jane talked to Mrs. Fairfax about her childhood, they really underplayed the tragedy of her childhood and sort of made it seem like it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Which Jane having a horrendous childhood is a really important part of Jane Eyre.
Exactly.
And so that really, it threw the story off in the same way that not having a pilot threw the story off for me.
I agree with that assessment, Lillian. And I think there was a lot of things about the way that this Jane came across that was super different from all the other Janes. First of all, she looks like a Barbie. So very attractive young lady. The fact that, she doesn't dwell on her childhood. She also feels very confident and talkative. She instantly asserts herself into situations. She stands up for herself. She definitely seems as if someone who came from like a good background, well, or a supportive background, maybe. I did not, from watching this, get the impression that she pulled herself up from her bootstraps from hardship. It seems more like, oh, like, look how beautiful she is. And she probably came from a decent place and is super confident because she's always gotten her way. Yeah, I don't know. I did like her forwardness with like helping him, where she's like, I'm stronger than you think, when she like carries him all the way to the house, which I kind of want to imagine that maybe she like hoisted him up piggyback style and ran. Like, wouldn't that be great?
Just like did the cross his arms over her front and kind of like stick her back out.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's the reverse Edward and Bella running up the mountain. Also just suspended on wires.
Speaking of the fact that this actress is incredibly beautiful, they did keep some of the lines in there. Like, they don't play her as someone who doesn't feel like she thinks she's beautiful. I think she has that confidence that you referenced. Mm-hmm. But Mr. Rochester does say, "I'm not handsome and you're not beautiful." And I literally wrote down, liar.
Liar. You're such a liar. Like, look at this lady. She literally looks like a Barbie doll. Which you mentioned before, she has two dresses. The purple one that she wears when she comes to the party, that thing looks like it was vacuumed onto her body. Like, how did it do the under the breast thing? And I'm like, so yeah, she's hot. She's working it.
Yeah.
She's not a comely little teacher.
Yes. And she's wearing so much makeup, which again, I feel like is a product of the time.
Right.
But I think that that's one of the ways that some of our other Janes that we've seen, you take these beautiful women that we all know are gorgeous, mm-hmm. like Ruth Wilson, mm-hmm. and then you take their makeup off and then you put on makeup that is meant to make them look less, like more plain, where this is like just that Barbie effect of like absolute perfection, not a hair off on her head ever.
Yep.
Which was a really, the hair being all wispy and everywhere on our 83 Jane was so important.
I have a note here about how this was the saddest flaming bed scene ever.
I literally went back and was like, was there a fire? I didn't see a fire. I literally blinked. I like looked away for a single second and I came back and she was just pouring water on him and he was complaining about it. And I was like, fair.
It looked to me like they like kept a pie in the oven for too long and then threw the flaming pie on his bed. It was just like a perfect little circle on fire. And then it was instantly out.
Because they couldn't afford a canopy bed. So usually they set the canopy part on fire, but he didn't have a canopy bed. So then you have to literally set the mattress on fire.
Oh, that was so funny.
Oh God, it was so good.
And again, with the timing, like they put it out and he's like, stay in this room and don't come out. And then it just changes scenes. And it's like, there's no like touching moment. Like he's just going to her on the balcony with two like glasses of wine at the party the next day. And I'm like, ooh, watch out with him and the alcohol. Like, I don't know. It just didn't work.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's interesting because we are looking for these specific beats of the story, right? Like I'm sitting here being like, how you play this really matters to me. And like how this goes is something that really matters to me. And so it's sort of jarring to not have those, but then also I'm sitting there going, what do you think happened, person who doesn't know the movie?
Yes, it'd be so confusing.
Like if you've never experienced Jane Eyre before, what do you think happened after that?
Since we've come back to the party, one note that I think is kind of a plus that I haven't seen any other movie do is I did like that Rochester asked the question of both Jane of like, mm-hmm. if all these people left me, would you stay? And she instantly says, yes, I would stay with you. You're my friend. Which she also friend zones him. He's like, goes to like, like lift her chin with his finger. And she's like, you're my pal. And he's like, wah, wah.
Which probably was the sound effect because all of this music was stock 50s music, movie music.
But then he goes to Blanche Ingram and he asks her the same question, which we haven't seen any Rochester do that before. We mm-hmm. always see Rochester, either he assumes her character or he knows from experience of her snobbishness, but here he actually asks Blanche, he's like, if everyone turned their back on me, would you stay? And she's like, I'd have to know why they're turning their back, which I mean, makes sense given fair. The circumstances. And then he's like, but what if my fortune was gone? She's like, ha, that's funny. Don't even say that.
But, and then looks very concerned. I will say I was, for the first time ever, I was fully on Blanche's side. Is it Blanche or Blanche?
I think both work.
Okay. Both work.
Blanche, I think it's the fancy way to say it.
Ooh, and I always forget that you're so much fancier than me.
I'm going to say Blanche. Blanche.
So Blanche, what Blanche says, I was for the first time on her side when he goes, if everybody left me, would you? And she's like, I would probably want to know why, like still trying to be her charming self. But like under that, I'm like, so would I, dude. Like,
right.
If everyone left you, maybe you did something really bad. And so his, then he very fairly responds with his very good example of like, what would be, what does he think she's really here for? And it's his money. Right. And mm-hmm. then she reveals that she's definitely here for the money. And the eyebrows are a huge turnoff for her, unlike Jane. But another fair credit to Blanche is when a few seconds later, a grown-ass man is thrown down the stairs.
With scratches on his face, and screaming that a lady has a knife.
Yes. And that's the, this is the first time that we've seen that part in front of like everyone.
Right.
And that's why like him just being like, turn the music back on. Everything's fine. Look away. Like what a sketchy thing to do. It's one thing to help have Jane help you hide this from your guests. It's a totally different thing to be like, don't worry about the man talking about someone upstairs with a knife. It's nothing for you to worry about. Keep playing the music. Dance, you people. Dance, dance.
Dying. I was thinking to myself, as buck wild as that was, I was trying to imagine like, how would I react if I was at a party today and that happened? Like I pictured like being at one of Grace's like It's Lit fam house parties, and if one of like their trendy artsy music friends stumbled downstairs with scratches on his face saying a lady has a knife, I think I'd be like, I'm getting out of this house.
Like, I would first look around to see if we had accidentally been invited to what we didn't know was a murder mystery party.
Right.
And then if somebody just yelled dance dance over and over again, I would be like, Grace, you can't live here anymore. It's too spooky. We've got to get you out. You're in a cult.
Oh my God. Dude, I kind of loved that so much of this happened just like without any decorum. It was just like, this is announced before the party. And also he doesn't even get to sweep her off to the chapel. Mason just bursts in and he's like, she's Mary. It's my sister. It's like, shit.
And then the look he gives the camera after they leave is, I'm Oscar. You deserve an Oscar for that moment, sir.
I was planning on giving this a low rating, but maybe my points will go up just how much I'm laughing right now. This is worth the bellyache.
I think I really genuinely liked Blanche in this. I think that actress did a really good job of playing the character. I think the beats that they gave her were so good. Mm-hmm. The fact that she was dancing with Mr. Rochester before and he was like looking around the room and she goes, oh, are you waiting for someone? Like kind of trying to get him to pay attention to her. And he goes, mm-hmm. Yeah. I am waiting for someone.
Yeah, that's not you, Blanche.
You're so annoying to me. I find her really annoying.
Dude, she's also, I mean, I like Blanche a lot in this too. Although I have to say it's a little desperate. Is desperate the word I want to use? A little too obvious when he's out on the balcony with Jane and Blanche just sits down and looks at them. And she's like, I'm just going to stand here until he comes out and talks to me. And I'm like, what is this? The Bachelor?
It was such perfect, like, she was off in the party, and then right at the time when Jane's about to say, like, somebody's waiting for you, she came and just, like, subtly sat down and stared at him from the corner, like, hi, I'm here, whenever you're ready.
Oh,
I loved when she, like, realized who Jane was, found out that Jane was the governess, and then Jane just stood there mm-hmm. while Blanche loudly talked smack about her to Mrs. Fairfax, was just like, I'm talking to Jane about Jane, but I can't talk to her because she's not important enough for me to actually talk to. And basically her whole vibe is like, I definitely don't think she's a threat because she's just a governess. I'm tearing her down emotionally for other reasons and not because I'm scared of the hold she has on the man that I want to marry for his money, but she's just a governess. So what a bad thing for her. And Mrs. Fairfax the whole time is like, I don't want to be a part of this.
He's like, dude, I don't like you. Why are you talking to me?
I actually, like, I don't know if you've noticed, but this is not the most important thing happening tonight.
Oh my God. She's like, just wait till this guy falls down the stairs.
You will not believe what is happening in this house. And I have been, Mrs. Fairfax is for real running this house. She runs the drama. She runs everything.
I wrote down that this Fairfax is 100% an accomplice.
Like,
absolutely.
She knows 10,000% what's up. Like, I love that when Jane comes downstairs and Fairfax is like, she's like, what's wrong? And she's like, I just met the lady of the house. And Fairfax is like, oh, sorry. Sorry you had to see that.
It's like, it's a huge bummer, huh? And then Jane's like, he was going to marry me. And she's like, yeah, well, he deserves to be happy, doesn't he? It's like, what do you mean?
No.
No, I'm telling you that I just met his wife after her brother told me about him. And you're saying he deserves to be happy?
Yeah, no, nope. No, I disagree.
They go ahead. Reference the fact that there's a gypsy there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But we don't get to see him dressed up. And if I'm totally honest, if one thing could have taken this to a 10 out of 10, it would have been that man and those eyebrows trying to dress up as a someone else.
Oh my gosh. Incredible. Well, I don't think he would want to put the costume over that incredibly tight fitting jacket that he was wearing, which I liked the jacket. I also liked his billowy sleeves. There were a couple of, like, though I wasn't crazy about him, like, getting into her space and, like, kind of aggressively so, there were a few moments, like, I thought it was so funny when she tries to leave and he slides into the door and he's got his big poofy sleeve on the way and he's like, just casually leaning here. Don't leave, Jane, don't leave. It's like, so I liked his clothing. It made him look very broad and strong, but didn't like the rest of that.
I one line that I did write down that he said to her, which I can't remember the exact moment. I'm trying to remember if it was right before or right after. I think it was right after she found out about the wife. I've heard versions of this line, but the exact way he said it sounded unique to me, which is they talk a lot about what's right and wrong in this movie explicitly. Yeah. And he says, right, wrong, those are cloudy things, but you are the light. I reach out for the light.
I liked that.
That was very good. I liked that a lot.
That's a good line. Yeah. That sounds poetic enough that it's probably in the novel. The more that we watch this, and I think many people will be happy to hear this, and the more that we engage with our new friends on Instagram who clearly have read the novel, mm-hmm. I'm like, I got to read this book. So I'm probably going to do that soon. Yeah.
I know, me too. I feel like we got to.
Yay.
So plus I'm going to be totally honest about an incredibly vain reason I want to read the book. There's all the good reasons, which is all of the reasons you listed. The vain one is, my God, there's some really pretty copies of this book.
Yes.
And if I buy like 6 really pretty copies of Jane Eyre and I haven't read it.
That's bad, Lillian.
It's a bad time. It's a bad look.
Dude, I think maybe we should put out like a poll or something and ask if there's like a version, maybe like artistically or visually, that people recommend that we get. That'd be cool. Just to see, send us your Jane Eyre book recommendations.
Yeah. What edition should we try to locate? Mm-hmm. Is there one that has like particularly beautiful drawings in it or something? I've seen enough old timey drawings that I feel like there's gotta be versions of it that have that. Keeping Absolutely. In mind that neither of us are wildly wealthy.
Yes. Can't get any kind of first editions up in here.
If you're like, you should locate a first edition, it's only $150,000. I would be like, cool. You're living in a different life than me, huh?
Lillian, do you have any like wrap up comments? I have one more yikes moment that I just remembered.
I have Bonnet Watch.
Okay, cool. Let me just share one yikes thing and then we'll soften the blow with a Bonnet Watch. And that is when Rochester is talking to Fairfax, like complaining about how stupid his brother-in-law is for going in and turning his back and getting attacked. Fairfax says, she's like, well, maybe he didn't want to hit a lady. And Rochester goes, ha ha, and laughs. Like, I was like, oh boy, this guy is definitely okay with that. Like, so there is a big no-no for me. Let's talk about hats.
Yes, let's talk about bonnets. She has 2 bonnets the whole movie. Again, very limited costuming in this. They make the costuming have a lot of impact, though. Big fan of the bonnet. It's like a velvet.
It looked like it's velvet,
very structured bonnet with this very pretty bow that they are ribbon that they sort of, what is that called when you do the little bunching thing?
The bunching? I'm not sure.
Ooh.
I know.
You know what? You know where we should learn that?
Google.
We're going to post a picture about it. No. I want people to just, I don't have to search for it and learn it myself.
You were literally setting me up for that.
No. I want people to tell me about it on the internet. I was setting up for something totally different.
Oh my God, cute.
Instagram. We're going to obviously Bonnet Watch. Hashtag Bonnet Watch 1847 is blowing up, guys. It is amazing. People are out there. They're talking about bonnets. We're starting. This is how we're planting the seeds to bring bonnets back. Yep. Bring Bonnet Back Again is going to be the next hashtag once this one has 100,000 followers. There'll be a Bonnet Watch next week or this week. Time, you know?
You know.
And it'll have point. That. And then somebody tell me what the Bunchen's about. Go in and comment that. You guys know I don't.
We will educate ourselves thoroughly. By the time this podcast concludes, not only Lillian, will we own our own beautiful bonnets because we're bringing them back, baby, but we'll also know every single part of a bonnet and its construction and what it means and what it says about you.
And all the variations.
Yeah.
This is a time for me to make my big bonnet confession. Mm-hmm. So I was talking to my mom about our podcast because my mom's a cool lady and it's important to talk to her about everything.
Yes.
And I referenced Bonnet Watch. And she and I remembered that I owned a bonnet as a child.
Wait, how old? Like a baby bonnet or a little kid bonnet?
Like a little bit too old to wear a bonnet situation. I was like 11, 12-ish. And we went and visited like some sort of civil war. My dad was in, as all dads of our dad's vintage, our parents' vintage, went through a civil war phase. So on a family vacation, we all went to this civil war museum thing. And I dramatically needed a bonnet. I wanted the whole outfit, but decided the bonnet was what I should get. And there are so many pictures of me on this family vacation.
Yes.
Wearing normal early 2000s tween clothes from the Limited 2 and also a bonnet.
Oh my God, Lillian, you must bless our eyes with this on Instagram. Please share.
I've been trying to find the pictures. They're prints, right? Like, so I have to go to my mom's house and dig through for them.
And then also find the bonnet and then make a recreation photo. Oh my God.
Dude, I just realized I might have that bonnet somewhere. I don't think so. Okay. I make no promises. Hopefully, will probably have to buy new bonnets or commission them.
Your 11-year-old bonnet is still at your parents' house someplace. Because, oh my God, Lillian. Dude, when we find that, my fiance Sam is a photographer. We are doing a recreation photo shoot. You better believe it. I can't wait.
You'll have to play Robin Patrick. We'll find a cannon and like climb all over it. And I'll wear a bonnet with normal clothes.
Amazing. I can't wait to play your brothers. Both of them. Photoshop my face. Yes.
Sam's, as we said, professional photographer.
Yes.
So he should be able to Photoshop you so that you can be both brothers.
Oh yeah. It's going to happen. I can't wait for this.
We talked about eyebrows. That was a super important part of this.
Although the eyebrows almost rivaled the thickness of his mutton chops. Dang.
Yes.
This guy was just a woolly faced man.
He was a hairy man. The mutton chops, all the men in this had the mutton chops, which there weren't a lot of men in this.
No.
When she comes back after being gone for 15 minutes and the house burned down, when he's blind, he's got his big head bandage situation, very fresh wounds because of how recently this happened, even like though
5 minutes ago,
see a doctor and get bitter about it. When she first sees him, he's yelling at her to speak, which is also what he says to her when they're first having that conversation. It's a really great allusion to their first moments. Mm-hmm. And I really liked that a lot.
Well, yeah, she throws back with the exact same lines that she responded with the first time, where she's like, what about, like, I can tell you my credentials and why I'm a good person for this job. And he's like, oh my God, it's you.
Yeah, I really, really liked that. So I want to hear your rating first.
Okay.
And I want to know if our chuckles and your sore tummy has brought your score up. So I want to know what you would have rated it and what you will rate it now.
Oh boy. Okay. My original rating, I think I was going to give this, it's either a 4 or a 5 mutton chops out of 10. You know what? I think I'm going to go down to 4 because it's pretty darn low. I'm going to do 4 mutton chops out of 10. That was my first one. I'm going to bump it up to a generous 5 because of the laughter, which was tonight was super fun, but still does not make the movie worthwhile.
So I think I'm going to shock you with my score, which I I sometimes will rate them before. I'll sometimes rate them during. I rated this one before because I wanted to remember. Mm-hmm. I rated this 7 out of 10.
Really?
Because I really liked, I think it was a product of its like time. And I think it was a product of its circumstances. And I think for the quarter that they had that they found between the couch cushions and somebody's grandma's attic, they did a really good job. And I really, I like the way that these kind of movies feel. Mm-hmm. And also they cut a lot of stuff that I don't like having to watch. I've made it no secret that I don't like to watch people be mean to Jane as a child. I think they maybe did a slight disservice to the story of Jane Eyre. I would not recommend this being
your first watch
of Jane Eyre. This should not be what you think of when you think of Jane Eyre. Mm-hmm. However, if you really like movies from the 50s, if you really like that sort of like dramatic theater-esque quality, mm-hmm. And you can look past some of the more, the flaws, if you can look past them, I think it's a lovely time. And it's not a lot of your time. It's an hour.
That's right. It's a short watch.
I don't know that I said my metric, but 7 out of 10 longing looks.
Wow. Okay. I now want you to go back and rewatch the Timothy Dalton because that has all of the same old timey charm and it's way better. And I want your rating to go up on Timmy D.
It's so intense though. Like if we cut that baby down to an hour, if you can make me an hour long supercut of the Timmy D version.
Ooh. If I quit my job, I would do that. I have to work.
After we become wealthy enough to buy those first $150,000 first editions, I don't know if that's how much they cost, but it feels like they should.
Yeah. When this podcast gets enough money where we can buy the first editions, we can also, your good friend and our new podcast friend, Dana, was sharing all of these amazing, newsletters that she writes, and she's been to like the last house where Emily Bronte lives. And she showed us a photo of a hat, a bonnet worn by actual Emily Bronte. We're going to buy that hat. We'll be like, it's our hat now.
We're going to have a whole museum about it. Piper and I've talked about the fact that our super specific Jane Eyre adaption podcast is how we become for real celebrities.
Yeah. Yeah. This is our nest egg. Yeah. Once we create our GoFundMe, our Patreon.
We've talked about that for buying DVDs.
Yes, it's like, help me. I quit my job to edit a supercut of Timmy D and now I'm poor. #worth it. Help me, I'm poor.
Speaking of needing help because we're poor, let's talk about what we're watching next week. Yes. Which is, we have an amazing friend of the podcast who, oh gosh, I want to look up both her. You talk about which version we're watching. Well, I look up, I want her Instagram name, also her actual human name.
Awesome. I think some of our closest listeners will be very excited. So hold on to your bonnets, folks. We are going to be doing the 1973?
Yes.
Is it 73? 73 mm-hmm. version, which I thought was a movie, but apparently it is a miniseries. So we are going to break this bad boy up into two parts so we can give it all the love and attention it deserves. It's been told to us, this is a favorite of many people. So we're excited to see, hopefully not roast it to pieces like we did this one, which I'm sure we won't, because you guys seem like you have good tastes. So we trust you.
Yes. So first, we've got a few different people to thank for this version. It was originally suggested to us by our friend of the podcast, who we've talked about in a few different circumstances, which is, she's at Airfiles on Instagram. I do want to make a correction from last episode. I said that is also the name of the podcast. The name of the podcast is the Jane Eyre Files, which Piper said right, and then I incorrectly corrected her.
And I was so nice, I didn't say anything.
So Piper gets an extra gold star this week, and a one I told you so for the rest of time. She can use that at any point in the future to just make me feel bad.
Cash it in for a lollipop or a treat.
And then a very special thank you goes to Flora, who is the Regency Parlor on Instagram. I believe she's on some other social channels as well. She heard, we were commenting back and forth with Lady of Whimsy, who was also suggesting that we watch that version. She heard that we were having trouble finding a way to stream it. And so she managed to track down a version of it for us and get that to us so that we're going to be able to watch it. So huge thank you to all of our amazing little Jane Eyre community. We're having just the most fun talking to you guys and getting to know you and talking about this thing that Piper and I've had these conversations, just the two of us, before. We're just recording them and putting them on the internet now.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you so much for sharing this version with us. It's really kind. Also, speaking of like our Jane Eyre community, Lillian, you and I both recently joined a Jane Eyre fan club on Facebook, which has also been a blast. And I just want to share on air, in case you're not in that fan community there, this has officially saturated my entire life, because I actively dreamt about Jane in Rochester the other night, and it was like a badass Jane, because in my dream she was, you know, she just heard the news and she's fleeing from Thornfield, but in my dream she takes Adele with her and she gets a carriage and she's being real smart about it, and it's like this dramatic scene where she's like running through this forest. Well, they weren't running, they were in a carriage, but going, and she got the girl, and I was like, yeah, get her away from there. So it's very exciting.
Are we going to make the finale of this podcast 100,000 years from now, after we've watched the 2 million adaptions of Jane Eyre? Are we going to make the finale us making our own adaption of Jane Eyre?
Don't tempt me.
With the quarters we find in our couch and someone's grandma's clothes.
Yes. You said it, and now it's happening. We made a very successful movie when we were in middle school.
About it. People are gonna want it for real. Oh,
I know,
no.
And we can't show it to you. Once we create a Patreon, and we get to like $1,000, we'll release the movie that we filmed.
That goes behind a payroll wall. Private Eye.
Yeah, it's about a lady who solves crimes. So we'll film our own Jane Eyre, because we'll have to prove that we understand adaptation and Jane Eyre so perfectly that we can make the world's most perfect Jane Eyre adaptation by making our own at the end of this.
And after we obviously get that paywall up there and people start paying us, when we get thousands and thousands of tweets demanding that we release Charlotte Private Eye, we will also start doing a whole new payroll to finally make the highly demanded sequel, which so far has only been demanded by people who were in the cast of the original film.
A good friend, Maya, will surely appear on the show at some point. She's started the script.
It's been... because it's been over 10 years. We might be at 15 years in the making, this movie.
Yeah. I think once we reach 20, we have to film the sequel for real.
I think a bunch of 30-year-olds remaking the movie they made in middle school is choice.
Oh my God. I'd watch it.
We watch it every like few years when we get together. We'll have a movie night and we'll watch it. It's so good.
Oh, I can't wait. If anyone is still listening at this point, thank you for sticking around. We love you so much. Send us your home movies, and your you can send us links at airbuds@gmail.com, or you can DM us on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. We're on all the places. It's spelled the same as our show and as our protagonist, Jane Eyre herself. So
Thank you all so much.
Thanks, guys. See you later.